A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Hey everybody, Rob Cesternino here. Welcome back to another week of The Wiggle Room, talking about the stories of Survivor Co Wrong for week number 11. And here he is. It's the star of The Wiggle Room. Welcome back, our good buddy, Josh Wiggler.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Yes.
Lair. Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
What?
Lair.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lair.
Oh. Lair.
Lair. Lair.
Lair.
Do the wiggle, man. A little wiggle, man. Yeah.
You do you, boo-boo.
Yes.
What is that? What was that last part? What was that? That was new.
You do you, boo-boo.
I'll do me, boo-boo. Okay, sure. Jason's here. Jason's hanging out. I know he was hanging out on your Periscope. He's hanging out in the Wiggle Room, too.
Hangs out everywhere. So, yeah, we have, first we have...
You do you, boo-boo.
We have...
Don't check me, boo.
And...
Don't check me, boo.
Peek-a-boo.
Wow, this is three boos. Three
also,
Bs.
That Ty compared himself to Bamboo also. What's your favorite boo reference of Survivor Co. Wrong?
I think Peek-a-boo's got to still be number one.
Peek-a-boo.
Yeah, but Don't Check Me Boo is pretty good.
Don't Check Me Boo.
Yeah. So, I think that Jason's You Do You Boo-Boo is a little too quiet for me.
A little too quiet. Yeah,
hushed
I had to
tones.
Really boost
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you really got to like scream that out. You got to push that out.
So,
You Do You Boo-Boo!
That's right. That's right.
When
All
is
right.
somebody going to do a yogi? Hey, boo-boo.
Hey, boo-boo. So we are back here, Wiggle Room, week number 11. And boy, we are just closing in on the finale. It's officially May. And
it
now
is.
We are about 2.5 weeks away from this whole thing being done and the long Survivor offseason.
It's almost upon us. We are going to have that long stretch. And guys, very excited to announce the evolution of... No, we don't have anything coming
no.
up. There's nothing. We got nothing for your offseason. Sorry.
Nothing in the hopper. Ready to go. Although...
I wish. That would be great. That would be fun. We're not going to be able to drop any like lemonades on you guys. Like no surprise digital albums.
Yeah. About a year ago this time, we were recording the 17-hour Heroes versus Villains evolution of strategy.
Oh, man. I mean, I already kind of have a stomach ache today. I'm not feeling super well. But just thinking about the process of recording 20 hours on Heroes Villains, it was fun, but it was heavy. It was a lot.
That was a lot like going on there.
I feel like that was like a 2-week project.
Oh, that was, I think that one took like 3 weeks to actually record.
It was a long one.
But anyway, so enough about this week in RHAP history. Why don't we get into talking about what's going on with Survivor and what's going on with you? How's your week been? I know you've been very busy, of course, that you cover Game of Thrones, not only with us on post-show recaps, but also for The Hollywood Reporter. This has got to be one of your busiest weeks of the year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is basically my full-time gig right now, is doing nothing but thinking about either Survivor or Game of Thrones. There is no middle ground, and I don't know if there's any winning either, but I'm having a good time. I'm having a really fun time. Game of Thrones premiere week was big. I'm tired, Rob. I'm a little sleepy today, I will admit.
Okay, well, very excited to get into everything. After last week, we did our Survivor Dornio, in addition to... how do you think the feedback was on that?
I think the feedback was pretty good. I definitely have regrets. I certainly have plenty of regrets on that one. I wish that we had called Mount St. Sam. I wish that we had called that Mount Sam Neill. That was one of them. I thought that would have been funny. Obviously, Melisandre and Debbie should have been a one for one. Missandei should have gone in the Liz Markham spot. There are some regrets here and there. Spoilers if you didn't listen to Survivor Dornio, but... you had a week.
Some inside baseball on that. It was sort of, I don't know if you knew this the whole way through, that it was going to be an exact one for one of Survivor Co. Wrong. So I thought we were going to be simulating it a little bit more. And then about halfway through, it's like, oh, okay, so this person is this person. And then the game just became, how do we, you know, incorporate, you know, jokes about Co. Wrong into what's going on with Game of Thrones?
You know, sort of like my thing, Rob, is like, I typically don't know what I'm doing. generally, as a rule. I just kind of do things, like the Joker says about dogs. And I just kind of did things here with Survivor Dornio, and over the course of the conversation, it became clear that we were really just masking Survivor Ko-Rong with some Game of Thrones characters.
Yeah, well, it was fun. All right, so let's get into week 11 here as we start to head towards the finale. We're down to now only six people left in the game. Julia goes out. Of course, you did your exit interview with Julia this week. I had mine as well. I thought
she was
that
great,
she was
right?
Lovely. Yeah, I thought she was really, I thought she had a lot of poise and did a really, really strong job. Not a lot of revisionist history, it seemed like.
No, she was great. And, you know, the big like conversation online and amongst fans, a lot of it that I've seen has been, you know, this whole Michelle Truther thing. And like, Michelle is going to win. Michelle's got this on lockdown. I know that Fishback really gave the boot order on the know-it-alls this week. He feels really confident about how things are playing out. So I was really curious to get Julia's take on Michelle, not as her friend, but just Michelle as a player. Because that's really what I'm curious about. There's no question that Michelle is present on the show, and Michelle has been active on the show, but has she been driving the bus? Has she been in charge of moves, in charge of decisions, or has she just kind of been going along with things, and where is that going to change, if it changes at all? So I was curious to get Julia's take on Michelle. I thought that she gave a really balanced answer about that, which was maybe this is a great thing for Michelle to kind of unshackle herself from her closest partner in the game. But Julia said, I do genuinely think I was the much bigger threat than Michelle was right now. And through the majority of the game, I was driving while Michelle was in the back seat.
Get in the back seat and let me drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Julia's pulling a Missy, and Michelle is her bae.
Yeah.
Love you, bae.
Love you, bae. Yeah, she's even like, no offense, Michelle, but... You know, sorry, that was Morgan. But she did say, like, I hate to say it, but I think I had a lot of control over Michelle. I thought that Julia gave a really measured answer to that, to a lot of other stuff. It was really fun talking to her. Very mature for her age, you know, only 20 years old, but a lot of wisdom in those 20 years, I think.
All right. Well, in terms of Julia and her story, you know, she really started to emerge. We hardly saw anything about her before the tribe swap, and then we really started to get a picture of her during when she went to Braun Beach by herself. And then she comes out of that. She's sort of with Scott Pollard coming into the merge. And then we see her make a few moves here and there. And I felt like that she's really in a swing position through most of this merge. What do you think about the story of Julia as we start to wrap this up?
Yeah, I think, you know, Julia was a really welcome addition to this season. You know, she's going out. This is the Jeffra Bland spot, isn't it?
Yes.
So she's going out in the Jeffra Bland spot, and you know that I love me some Jeffra. We covered this extensively in the Evolution of Strategy, the Kageyan chapter. We talked a lot about my love for Jeffra, and are you peeing? I know no one's pooping, but is anybody peeing?
It's a survivor nightmare.
It's a nightmare. I love Jeffra, but I don't think that anyone's really going to stand there and accuse Jeffra of playing a super aggressive game. I think she plays a better game than she's probably remembered for, but she's not doing anything wildly aggressive, and really, you know, she has some opportunities to change things up, and she chooses not to. I feel like Julia, and she even owns this in, you know, her day after video and things like that. I think that she went out there thinking it's probably a long shot to win, but at least I can maybe shake some things up, and I can kind of shake up this image of the young blonde chick who goes out on Survivor and gets knocked out in the pre-merge. You know, doesn't even make it to the merge, isn't even dateable, which would be very upsetting for certain father figures, I believe.
that was a little wacky.
So I think that she came out there with that agenda. I think that she really wanted to play the middle. I think that she wanted to show that she was keeping her options open. I think she wanted to show that you can go out there and be a teenager or a very young person and play Survivor and play it in a dynamic way that's going to, you know, really ruffle or rustle some feathers along the way and just really show that you don't just have to get taken to the end or you don't have to get taken out early if you are a young person playing Survivor. I really like that. I hope that Survivor learns a casting lesson from Julia. More like this. This is great. You know, Purple Kelly is fun for like a one-off joke, but like that's not the type of young Survivor woman or young Survivor man even. Like that young type, that's not the type of person that I feel like we should be seeing on Survivor. I feel like we should be seeing more like Julia. I think it's great for the story to have somebody who is willing to shake things up. It makes the story, it makes the narrative of the season much more creatively interesting and dynamic. So I really like that. And of course, it shakes up the game a little bit as well. And that's really fun. So Julia was great. I really liked her. I don't know if she has this massive story other than having been a bit of a foil for Aubrey for a little while. And I think ultimately what her story might be, and we'll dig into this a little bit this week, is she the fuel for Michelle? Is she the person who was driving driving Michelle around. And now that Michelle has like thrown her out of the car, is Michelle behind the wheel and is she going to do some dangerous stuff? I think she's more of a character that is pushing other characters into different directions than having a major story herself. But I think that her presence this season was a great thing. I think that she pushed the show in some really great ways.
Turning to Michelle, and the Michelle and Julia story is interesting to me because that we saw Michelle cast Julia aside. Now, again, we could say that, okay, well, Michelle at least had the presence of mind to know she didn't have the votes. And right. If she had her druthers, she would have voted with Julia and Jason if Sydney was on board with that plan. But Sydney, I think, was not on board in that plan. We talked about her body language in terms of how she was receiving Jason's pitches on the know-it-alls. So that vote's not there. Michelle stays with her alliance with Aubrey and Sydney and votes against Julia. And in my exit interview with Julia, I'm not sure if you guys got into this as well, that she talked about how she was upset that Michelle voted for her. And Josh, I do think that this is an unusual thing on Survivor where somebody votes out one of their friends, not just that their friend gets blindsided, but they vote with the majority against their close ally.
Yeah. I thought you were my friend.
Right.
And you voted for me. Why did you do it? Yeah. You don't see that like kind of like friend breakup all too often.
Right.
Like you see a lot of, you know, backstabbing and you're betraying your partner and everything, but it's not always a ton of you are my friend.
It is an interesting move. And it's a move that at times is something that's like, okay, well, that's very transparent. Obviously, you voted against like where we saw Sean Cohen vote against Burton when Burton gets...
I don't know who Sean Cohen is. You'll have to clarify.
Jebediah Kovad. And then he comes back to Tribal after and is like, yeah, Burton was a real jerk. I always hated that guy.
Right. So are you thinking Michelle's going to come back to camp and be like, oh, Julia, what? She was the worst. It was just terrible living with Julia. I was just totally faking that friendship.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see if that's the move that she does, or we've also seen people be able to pivot off that in a better direction. I believe that Chris in Vanuatu, I believe he votes against Chad when Chad gets voted out. Was it Chad or Sarge he did that to?
I think it was Sarge, and he was like, Sarge turned to me and he said, Chris, go on without me. Vote for me because you have to do it. Go. I'll step on the grenade. Get out of here, Chris. And so, ladies, I did it. I voted for my friend Sarge. And then he goes to the confessionals like, yeah, it's all BS. None of that's real.
So we have seen this move happen. And then there's other people that are like, no, I'm never going to vote my friend out. We saw even Scott Pollard this season. I'm never going to write Jennifer's name down. And so that you guys have to do what you have to do, but I won't vote against her. So how do you think that this ends up shaking out for Michelle?
I think that this ends up shaking out for Michelle probably in a pretty good way.
In the immediate aftermath to this, how does she spinning this?
I think she comes back to camp and I think she says, that was really hard for me to do. I had a really difficult time voting out my friend. I was with Julia from the very beginning of the game. There was a period of time where we were not on the same beach together, but she was really, really close. You've all seen the gif of me putting my head on her shoulder. We were very close out there. I lost my cuddle buddy. I did this for you. This is to solidify my place in this group. Now you know that I'm with you. I was willing to vote out my friend. I think that she's going to be able to sell this pretty well. I don't think that this is going to be hard, and I don't think that there's going to be a huge emotional fallout. I bet we get some sort of teary-eyed confessional early on in this next episode. I think that that's very clear to see that Michelle is not happy, and even in the vote when she stands up and hugs Julia, she's obviously very upset about what she had to do. But I think that we're gonna, and it's interesting too when you think about like friends who do vote for each other or are never willing to vote for each other or anything like this. I feel like, you know, I think about your season a lot. Like I think about Heidi and Jenna at the end of the line, where you have often said like Heidi would have like totally sold Jenna down the river if she had to. Like that wouldn't have been
130%. Yeah,
would not have been hard.
Just to set that up. And I talked about this on the bonus podcast I did a little bit with Jordan Parhar, where that comparison has been made between, is Michelle like a Jenna Maraska? There's a point where after Alex gets voted off and it's just Jenna and Heidi and we have the numbers because Christy is with us and they're trying to pull Christy over and it's this 4-2 split. Yeah. You know, I come to Jenna and say, like, hey, I think you should vote out Heidi. And she's like, no, I'm never going to do that. And, you know, she ends up making like a whole big thing. But when Jenna is saying that she has tonsillitis or what, you know, I forget the exact ailment that she had. And she,
Heidi just like comes to you and is like, let's kill her.
Yeah. Like, come on, you have to vote her out. She doesn't feel well. Come on.
Right.
Come on. She's like, this is cruel what you're doing to her by keeping her here.
Yeah, we gotta get rid of her. Gotta get rid of Jenna.
Yeah.
No problem there. And so what's interesting is, like, I feel, just based on the way they had been playing, that, like, Julia would have gone into Heidi mode in a second on the show. Like, I feel like that would not have been ultimately a major issue for her. And I'm surprised Michelle, who I think has been recently been drawing a lot of comparisons to Jenna Maraska on the podcast as well. I know that you were talking about this with, I don't know if it was Tyson or Jordan. I know that you were talking with one of them about it, but it's all blending together in my mind. But, lots of podcasts. But I know that that's been a comparison that's been drawn not just by you, but by a lot of people. And so I was surprised to see the Jenna Maraska type be willing to make that move. But I think that we're at a place in Survivor where it's like, when the writing is on the wall, you just kind of have to go with the tide. And nothing that she was going to do there was going to save Julia. It was just a foregone conclusion, and she may as well be on the right side of the numbers. Otherwise, really, what's the point? So I was really surprised, because I feel like Julia, to me, is that Heidi cutthroat mode, and I didn't know if Michelle had that in her. Even though this is like a decisively right thing to do in the game, to write Julia's name down, I didn't know if she had that, you know, cutthroat edge to her for her own friends. So I was excited to see that. I thought it was good stuff.
And I think it's an interesting thing on Survivor always, where, you know, as you are losing things around you, there is some sort of, like, you can get defeated about it. But I think, like, as in the case of Jenna Maraska, when there is nothing left to lose, where you have lost your allies in, you know, Alex and Heidi, and you have nothing else left to lose, sometimes that can be a little freeing. And you can play a little more loosey-goosey at that point, because you're facing elimination.
Is that Mark the Chicken's girlfriend, Lucy Goosey?
Yes. Yes.
Love Lucy Goosey. I can't wait for Survivor 46, Mark the Chicken versus Lucy Goosey.
Lucy is a literal goose?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's actually a goose. It was a really luxurious reward challenge that they won.
Is Pelican Pete in the mix?
Yeah, Pelican Pete's out there for sure.
Three tribes, Pelican Pete versus Mark the Chicken versus Lucy Goosey.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be a great season. Hosted by Steve Chicken Morris, Dan. No, he's gone undercover Butch. He's a contestant that season.
Perfect. He is another one that definitely could go undercover Butch.
Oh, 1,000,000% until he opens his mouth and someone's like, oh, it's the damn guy. I remember that.
Nobody's saying that. Nobody's remembering that.
No one remembers that.
But for Michelle, I do think that the beginning of, and some people would say it's been there all along, but I feel like that you could see the scenario where her story is starting to form. And I do think that her challenge wins in both the reward and immunity were the beginning of that narrative.
Impressive. Impressive stuff for sure. And yeah, I think, you know, this is certainly more than it's hamburger time for me. You know, like, this is, you know, these are the types of story moments that I want to see in order to get on board with what the Michelle truthers have been saying all along, that watch Michelle. She's the person. She's decisively winning this season. It's happening. I'm really, you know, up until this week, I really wasn't fully getting that. Like, I could see the point. I could see where they're coming from. But then you get this hamburger confession. It's like, it's really just, why is this here? But I feel like storyline wise,
smoking hamburger,
the smoking burger. That's a really tasty burger. Really smoky barbecue sauce. Neither here nor there. But Michelle turning on Julia, or at least choosing to vote for her alongside the Alliance and getting back in with Sydney and Aubrey. Hard to understand, like, why Michelle would be targeted anytime soon, other than the fact that she might be really great at these challenges and that might become a little bit of a threat. But this was a great game move for Michelle. I think she's going to be in it for the long haul. And given the visibility and given the fact that this is like a solid story turn, and if she can really grab the story by both hands and really drive this thing forward, I could see it. I could see a Michelle win coming out of it in a way that I really couldn't up until this week.
Yeah, what I'd like to see, though, is her exert some sort of control, and if not control, then at least a run of these immunity wins. I think that probably the least satisfying ending to her story is that she just ends up against a person like a Jason, and, you know, she is sort of the person who is dragged to the end, more so than a person who sort of creates what they want their end game to look like and lets it play out, as opposed to somebody just miscalculates that they can beat her and then they bring her to the end and then the jury is like, yeah, we're not giving the money to you.
Right. I guess. But I mean, I think that there's, you know, in terms of a winner story, sure, that wouldn't be be super satisfying. But I think Survivor can be about a lot more than just the winner's journey. I think that a season does not have to be defined by like the high quality of the win. I think that, you know, even looking at, no offense to Jenna Maresca, but looking at your season where you're the person who's really shaking things up and really changing the strategy of the game and certainly driving the season into the point that it's going to go. And then you get clipped at three and that's a bummer, but it's still a great season. And I think that, you know, the
Fallen
big
Angel.
Yeah, Fallen Angel. Apparently, I've been talking to a Fallen Angel this whole time. Who knew? You know? I always thought you were a little bit of a rising devil, but no.
The Fallen Angel. Middle.
Yeah, I like the halo over your head. I just hadn't noticed it.
I don't necessarily judge a season by the winner. In fact, if you look at my rankings that I've done of the seasons, you will find that the people that I have as the best winners play in my least favorite seasons.
Exactly. 100%. Totally. And I think that, you know, you talk about, you know, if Michelle wins because Jason takes her to the end or because the two of them fall together in the final two by some set of circumstances and she beats Jason and it's not because of any necessarily strong strategic prowess that she exhibits or anything like that. Maybe it's a few challenge wins. Maybe she's just perceived as the easier person to beat. If Jason were to win immunity, who knows? Any number of reasons. If she goes up to the end against Jason and she wins and she hasn't been this massive, massive character, is that going to be a really bad thing for Kurong? Not necessarily. I think that you look back at a season like Samoa where Natalie White wins and it's really the Russell Hance show all along the way, and what ends up being kind of satisfying about that, at least for me and I'm sure for a bunch of other viewers, is like that's like the Fallen Angel gets to the end and loses. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how did that happen? What's the postmortem on that? And like to see like you can only bulldoze so much. And I think that a guy like Jason who went into this season really fancying himself a Russell Hands
right.
to watch the story being about how that guy lost could be just as compelling. So I think that, you know, the fact that this season going to be made or broken by whoever wins? I definitely don't think so. I think that just about anybody can win. It can be done in an interesting way and the story can still be really fun.
And if that Jason and Michelle scenario plays out, Josh, isn't there something delicious about that? Much like that smoky burger. Isn't there something about when back in January, when we went through seven things you need to know about Survivor Kurong, and we say, okay, oh, here's this guy, Kyle Jason. He says the only person to ever correctly play this game is Russell Hance.
Yeah.
And then to have this game, which in some ways could be like a love letter to Russell Hance, and then to have the same exact fate as Russell Hance in the game. I mean, isn't there something that's poetic and wonderful about that?
Yeah, that's like a juicy goosey. Like, that would be really delish.
It's like, oh, yeah, that if I went through the same exact blueprint as this guy, and I don't think that it's really been a one-for-one. I think that that's probably broad of an analysis. I think that Jason, his game has been different than Russell in a lot of different ways. You know, some things similar, but a lot of things different.
Yes.
But to say, you know, here's the blueprint. Print Russell Hance and then to suffer the same fate as Russell Hance, I think that that would be something that's really, really compelling.
That would be extremely entertaining for my standards. I would be very, very amused by that. I would find that really fun, and I would find that to be a really fun ending for Kurong, even though I haven't been like a huge, massive Michelle fan. I think Michelle's great. She seems like a really fun person, but just on the show, just like what's going on, not seeing a ton quite yet, I could really get behind a win like that in those circumstances. It's really all about what is that final story of that final tribal council and what does it mean for the season. I think that there are ways to interpret it that would be really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, I also feel like that there's been some Michelle bashing too, of like that people like wanting to say, you know, sort of like resisting if, you know, she is going to, why is she getting this edit? She's right. Done nothing. I think people are being super hard on her game, where I don't think she's done anything bad. Also, like, so I feel like that
she's
I'm finding myself getting a little defensive about her now.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God, you're like her Fallen Angel. you're like the Nicolas Cage to her Meg Ryan.
No, I just feel like a little bit defensive in that she's not editing the show. So I don't feel like that there's a need to, like, she, like, when you say that she's doing something wrong, okay, let's get on her case. But I feel like that people are starting to get on her case a little bit because they're not seeing, you know, she's not being as strategic as Aubrey. And so that people are sort of like, starting to knock her, I think, a little too far.
Right. Well, I mean, we can't all be as strategic as Aubrey. Aubrey's
very strategic.
Aubrey's very good.
I mean, it's hard to be as strategic as Aubrey. I mean, she is Cochran's dream girl, for
Cochran's
crying out loud.
Dream girls, yeah. For sure. And I think also, you know, the thing about Michelle's, like, as you're saying, like, you know, you could get on her case if she was doing something egregiously wrong, but she hasn't done anything wrong strategically. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't think that she's had any major blunder, anything significant, or any real serious head scratcher, unless you can remind me of one. But she didn't even go to tribal council until like day 24, which was a staggering number when Julia dropped that. I haven't cross-referenced that to see if that's accurate, but it's got to be close. You know, she didn't go to tribal council until the Nick vote.
She was on the wrong side of the vote, not this week, but the previous vote. But she did a lot of damage control this week to get back on the right side of the numbers. So she's had 1 week of the, you know, three or four votes that she's been in. One time she was on the wrong side of the number.
I don't think that counts as egregiously wrong. You know, it's not great. It's not fantastic. And you're not going to have a perfect record. But who has a perfect record? There are some people out there. It's rare. It's not something that you see all the time.
I mean, even Aubrey wrote down the wrong name at first, before she crossed it out.
She crossed it out. So, you know, Aubrey's really doing really great out there.
On the box score.
Apparently she made a sworn enemy out of that. I mean, that was the thing that came out in the exits, was like, Julia's like, yeah, me and Aubrey were not having it out there. It was really bad. I wish that we had seen that story of just like the bitter Mean Girls rivalry between the two of them.
Real rivalry.
Would have been really good. But I think, you know, again, like, I think that Michelle is playing a perfectly fine, calm, measured game. It's quiet. Is it, you know, is it the flashiest type of game for television? Maybe not. You know, maybe you are going to get a lot of burger time out of stuff like that. And, you know, that's just, you know, the side effect of playing kind of a quieter game. That's okay with me, especially, you know, I do think that there is, you know, there's a lot to be said for the people who win this game quietly. It's not always the greatest television, but I think often it's really effective gameplay. So, I mean, this is not a coronation, but
Josh, don't forget, you could always do the move where after the season say, well, I didn't trust production, so I just didn't tell them any of my strategy.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't want to do a coronation for Michelle. All I can say is, like, I can see it now. Like, I can see the argument that Michelle could win this season. You know, looking at the people who are left, there are only six people here. I know that you and Jordan did a power ranking of where everybody falls. Hard for me to disagree with where you guys landed. I think that Michelle is top half for sure in terms of these people that are left.
Did you like that Lost reference I made there?
Loved it. Big fan. Got to get Jordan Parr on post show recaps talking Lost at some point.
Yeah. If you missed that, I compared the Man of Faith being the Michelle winner edit, where Man of Science being the Aubrey is the favorite to win the game.
And the Man of Faith being Joseph Del Campo, because he looks like John Locke in his pregame photo.
Right. All right.
Not so much anymore.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other players and their story.
Have Lockbod though.
Lockbod?
Yeah, he's got Lockbod on lockdown. Lockdown. Great episode of Lost season 2. That was the blast story.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about Jason further, and maybe...
You sure? You really want to wade into the minefield again, Rob? You really want to go here?
Whatever. You know, I have a job to do.
I know you do. I know.
And there's some people that they are never going to change their opinion on Jason, and that's fine. But, you know, I do think that the show is not necessarily... It's a shifting picture from week to week.
Totally.
And so, Jason, I did feel like that he had a real riding the ship week, where it looked like that it was really hope was lost. And I feel like that there is, at least you could start to paint the picture where he's starting to get himself back into the good graces. And I feel like that with Sydney, I thought that he was just out. He was completely out on Sydney. And I feel like that he's a little bit like the ex-boyfriend, where the person that he had the very bad breakup with in Sydney is at least returning his text messages.
Right.
Where you would have felt like she's just basically giving
him... Instead of
him
sending them and seeing that they were red, but never getting anything back.
Don't check me, boo. Yeah.
So she's writing back to him. You know,
she's writing back.
The door is open. The door is ajar. I certainly could see Sydney at least entertaining the idea of, if it makes sense, to go back with him at some point.
I guess. And I got to imagine, like, at some point, you know, these people must be looking at the road ahead and at least considering Jason as an option to go to the end against. Because that feels like a pretty good way to win. And so I think that, you know, there's got to be some open-mindedness towards competing with Jason on your side. I do think that this probably was a pretty sensible spot for Sydney to, you know, do a little bit more than considerate and actually maybe go in on his plan against Ty. And the fact that she didn't, when I feel like there's a lot of good, easy to explain reasons for why she would have gone with that move, suggests to me that maybe the willingness to play with Jason isn't quite as strong as we thought. And I would guess if I'm Jason going into the next week, I'm knocking on some other doors that are not Sydney Storm's. You know, next week I would be looking into other possible partners because this really should have been Sydney's shot to come along. And Michelle had expressed a willingness to probably do this, didn't want to vote out Julia. I feel like there would be other people I'd be reaching out to if I'm Jason next week.
But I feel like he's done a good job in terms of where he appeared to be down and out following the Scott vote. And he's been able to keep those lines of communication open where it's not like he's been foaming at the mouth. You know, he didn't curse everybody out after tribal council, where he's trying to knock on some other doors, where kind of like a Johnny Fairplay is able to, okay, I know you hate me,
right?
But
let's do something that makes sense.
You know, I like to do something crazy. So I feel like that he's been able to at least keep those lines of conversation open, and who knows how it ultimately plays out this week. And, you know, at least from the previews, it looks like maybe there's some tension in the majority alliance and maybe that he has some opportunities. Do you see at all? I know I've made this comparison before, but I don't know if we've talked about it at really great lengths, and we don't need to right now. But the Chris Daugherty comparison.
Yeah.
Do you see that at all? Because here's this guy who's rough around the edges. You have this alliance where the Brain Trust is a group of women who are working together.
Right.
You have Ty and Joe there as well. But really, you know, you have the Brain Trust seems to be Sydney and Aubrey together.
Like, if Jason is somehow able to discombobulate everybody and get to the end against a Twyla Tanner type, can he sell that?
I don't think there is a Twyla out there in this group. Like, you know, you had Twyla, you had Scout, which, you know, with all due respect to them, certainly also rough around the edges themselves. Right. I think at the core of this alliance, I think, is more upside. But you had a number of people that were probably the bigger threats to win that were the people that ended up going out first out of that women's alliance. Do you think that he has that capacity?
I don't think so. I think, you know, a big piece of it is, one, you know, Chris didn't sabotage the camp. You know, he didn't do stuff like that. He sabotaged people's games.
But just to be fair, that wasn't that... people like Scott and Ty. And we never saw Jason. So he was in on the plan.
But he's part of that group. You know, he's associated. He's guilty by association.
It's almost like if Sarge does that.
Sarge going around sabotaging the camp. I mean, I think he kind of did that when he pulled his pants off. Yeah, we had to see Sarge's buttocks. I think that kind of counts. I think he's guilty by association on that. So I think that, you know, that's one thing. And then the other really big piece of it is, as you just said, there isn't really a Scout or Twyla with him out there, or even an Eliza, for that matter, of like your final four all being a group of salty people. There's not enough people in the current field. Who's like the closest you could say is like Sydney's a little rough around the edges sometimes. Maybe Joe is if you poke the bear, but we really haven't poked the bear too much this season.
Yeah.
Ty is obviously not that guy. Aubrey's pretty measured. Michelle is pretty even keel. And I really think even Sydney is really even keel. So I just don't think that there are those types. So I think that that's a big piece of the success for Chris, is not only is he able to dismantle the Brain Trust, but he's also able to move forward with this very strange assortment of individuals, like this really great, colorful final four, where it's really like that's a group that Chris has a shot against. And I just don't feel like there is a group here for Jason that he's got a shot against. I think Jason's drawing dead. I think that the best case scenario for Jason is he can get to second place, but I don't think that that's unrealistic. In fact, I think that's very realistic.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that Chris was able to do was he was able to sort of like at least work out what the pecking order was, where you had Leanne and Amy were calling all the shots, and he did have this close relationship with Julie where he was able to get information from the other sides. It looks like that his person that he had the closest relationship, his Julia, ends up going out of the game at this spot. So there's nobody that I think that's going to be feeding him a lot of information from the other side of things, and he lost it. You know, he referred to Julia as his double agent. And I don't think that there is a fracture in that majority group the same way that there was where Twyla and Scout were. It was like, hey, how come we're on the bottom? We'll go work with him. So I don't know who the person that he's going to be able to figure out is on the bottom of that group of five and get them on his side.
Yeah, and I think, you know, speaking of the pecking order, I do think, you know, to give some kudos to Jason, I guess, is I totally expected him to come back from that Scott Tribal Council, just blow it up to the point that, you know, everybody was on death watch for Mark the Chicken this whole week. Really thinking like, oh, God, this is the week where Mark the Chicken buys the farm. Damn, it's going to happen. Jason's just going to pop this poor chicken's head off and something off. And like, it's even on the show where Ty is like, oh man, I really thought you were going to kill Mark the Chicken. Jason's like, I'm not a monster. Like, I'm not going to just assassinate your chicken.
Let's see how this all plays out.
You know what?
Before we acquit Jason.
I think that Mark the Chicken is the safest one out there at this point. I think Mark the Chicken's going to make it all the way through. I mean, that's not, you know, addressing the possibility that Stephen Fishback ate Mark the Chicken. You know, that is still out there. I think, although it would probably be someone from Takeo would have been the person who ate Mark the Chicken. I don't think Juicy J and Mark the Chicken were one and the same. I think Mark the Chicken has to survive this season, given like the big push CBS is doing. I don't think CBS is really driving Mark the Chicken.
I don't know. I don't think so.
You want to have a gentleman's bet on this? Yes. I don't think CBS puts Mark the Chicken in the opening credits for online, sure. But I don't think that they're doing that if Mark the Chicken is going to be murdered. I just don't see that. I think it means that Mark the Chicken is going to have a happy ending.
Did you also know this? Do you know Mark's last name?
The Chicken?
No, Caruso.
Is that real?
It's real. It's happening.
Oh, my God. He's from a barn. It's real.
So
it is funny that you can't be someone named Mark on this show unless you are an animal.
Yeah,
you're either a chicken or a bear.
A bear.
A bear.
I actually feel like that Mark the Chicken is not going to make it to the end of the season.
Oh no. All right, talk it through.
I feel like that. Well, do you think that Ty is making it to day 39?
I don't think Ty makes it to day 39. I would love that. That'd be great, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. So if Ty is out, let's say Ty
is going to be a fallen angel with you, Rob. I think that you're going to get another angel in your pack.
Yeah.
The fallen angel gang gets one more.
So Ty doesn't make it all the way to the end. You feel like that these people are going back to camp? I mean, Sydney basically told you like, oh my God, I have been fantasizing about chicken.
I know. There was a lot of that in this episode. Like, oh my God, fried chicken. Yeah. They do the chicken dance out there.
The protector of the chicken is gone. Nobody is there to tell everybody.
No.
You don't think?
I don't think it's impossible, but this is where I'm reading the edit. This is where I'm reading the meta stuff. And I just don't think that CBS is turning Mark the Chicken into like a social media character unless Mark the Chicken survives.
It's like the Red Wedding.
No, they're not going to do that. That would have been this week. That would have happened now. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. I mean, it's possible. It's not impossible. But if we were to do a gentleman's bet, I would bet on the continued survival of Mark the Chicken.
Well, if you can come up with some stakes, I think I feel strongly about this.
We're talking poultry, not beef. Oh. I'll buy you a steak dinner if Mark the Chicken dies.
All right, fine. And I'll buy you a chicken dinner if you live.
Damn. All right, good. It's done. It'll be a very popular dinner on the Instagrams.
Okay.
We'll Periscope it and Jason will show up.
Hopefully he's not the one that killed the chicken, or Russell Hantz.
Maybe he's the chef.
Does he kill chickens the same way Russell Hantz kills chickens?
No, but he hunts down beef. He tracks it down. He is the best beef hunter, or one of the best beef hunters, maybe.
I feel like it's not hard to track down beef.
Yeah.
Like a cow moves very slow.
Yeah. You just go to the supermarket.
You know, we're talking about Ty and, you know, where he's going to go. But in terms of Ty's story, we had, you know, the opening shots of this episode were like, Ty, you did it. I'm so happy for you. You stood up to the bullies. And then he almost, seemingly to me, got blindsided with the idol in his pocket. But he says,
I'm not going to go home with an idol in my pocket.
I know.
Gosh, three times he said this season, he's not going home with an idol in his pocket.
Yeah.
We said in Worlds Apart, at the point where Lindsay said twice that a blue collar person is going to win this game, that it was prophecy.
Right.
Is Ty able to get away from this Maggie the Frog type prophecy?
Gold will be his shroud.
That idol will be in his pocket
right
when he goes home.
So he has said it three times?
I believe three times, going all the way back to when Beast Mode Cowboy got medevaced from the game.
Right.
I believe there's a confessional like, oh, okay, well, my friend.
I'm alone now. I'm with Nick. It's just me and Nick. We're the only guys, but I've got an idol and I'm not going home with an idol in my pocket.
Yes. I believe three times he has said it over the course of this season. Also, you know, extended wedding congratulations to the Beast Mode.
Beast Mode. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, they say three is a trend, Rob. You know, three is a trend. And I think, you know, by like NBA Jam rules, you're heating up with two shots in a row. Now he's on fire. I feel like I could see it. I hope
is
not.
That his story this season?
Yeah, it might be. I don't know if it's his story, but it might be his, you know, it might be his demise. You know, a lot of power going to Ty's head. He's been holding on to these weapons for so long. And, you know, maybe he's just too good hearted to play this game in the cutthroat way. And, you know, he goes home with those, you know, in his pocket. And like we said before, I mean, I think we talked about this the other week about how, like, just because, like, you go home with your idol and your advantage misplayed or unplayed doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, a total fool or laughingstock where that's going to be your legacy. I don't think that was James's legacy. I think James is thought of as a beloved character in Survivor lore, if not, you know, the strongest player.
At least at one point.
Yeah, I think that he was, you know, I still think people would be nostalgic for James. I feel people would be happy to see James again. But I think that, you know, you look at Rupert and you look at James, you look at these people who went out the way that they did, and it's not super glorious. It's not really glamorous. I think that Ty would fit that bill. So I wouldn't be worried about him long term. But I do think that that could be his story in terms of his end here. It has been stressed a lot. You bring up the Lindsay example. Even looking at this season, you know, the amount of times that Debbie said, a woman has to win this thing. I want a woman to win. And Sydney was in on that. And Michelle was in on that. And I think if you look at the field right now, it's real. The, you know, when you and Jordan did your power rankings, the three ladies, Sydney, Michelle, and Aubrey, are in the top half. And I think that's right. I think that those are the three with the best shot to win. And I'd be really surprised if anybody else does. So I think that, you know, there is a sense of prophecy on the show sometimes. You do listen for that kind of thing. Ty has said it three times. It's troubling. It's a little alarming.
Oh my God!
And what a dark ending it could potentially be at the point where Ty is blindsided with an idol in his pocket.
Right.
And then finds out that Mark the chicken has been slaughtered.
No.
That would be really brutal. The other thing about Mark, though, is that, like, the cast is joking about it online. Like, I know that, like, Nick and Neil, they are, like, really, like, some of their jokes are pretty grim dark to begin with, just their sense of humor. But they're making jokes about Mark the Chicken. I don't feel like they're going to do that if Mark the Chicken's really going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, if Ty gets voted at, like, day 37, I think then he's almost, like, out of the woods where it's like, okay, we'll eat on, you know, Tuesday.
Yeah,
you know, it's
like if...
I don't know if they know the days of the week.
Yeah. If Ty gets voted out this week, then maybe you should be worried for Mark the Chicken. But if he's like, if he's final five, final four, got to imagine that Mark the Chicken is going to be okay here.
I believe it's day 29 right now in the game.
That's a stretch. It's a stretch of time.
Stretch. So.
That's an edible stretch.
I think that you need to have like where it's like 3 or 4 days away from like, okay, we're all going to eat day 39. It's fine. We can let Mark the Chicken live. But I think that at that point, it'll be tricky.
Other prediction for the rest of the season, I feel really good saying Mark is going to make it.
Because you know who else doesn't love Mark the Chicken is Jodo Campo.
No, I know he doesn't. Maybe that's why he's been so quiet, is because they don't want to make a big character out of this Mark the Chicken murderer.
Yeah.
They don't want to glorify Mark's murderer.
Probably not. God. So that'll be very interesting to see how that all plays out.
Unbelievable.
Now, Josh, normally you have an exclusive for us on the Wiggle Room.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why you're the best in the business in terms of uncovering all of these big, huge, exclusive stories for Survivor. Yeah.
Real investigative journalism going on in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Really just digging it up. Sorry to say, no such news this week. Oh. No exclusive this week. This sounds like a classic Wiggle Room setup. I promise it's not. I've not been feeling super well. I've been very overworked. I had reached out to sources this week. Nobody was really biting back, so nothing really to report this week. I had a few ideas. I had a few suggestions for some people. Like, I reached out to Lady Wawa to see if she had anything like a paparazzi. Sokolowski! That didn't happen. That ultimately did not happen. I really couldn't get out of the way of just one song that was blasting in my head whenever I was thinking about Julia. I sent this song over to you, Rob. This is pulled from a movie. That was just in my head all week, and I couldn't come up with anything better than the wedding singer for Julia Sokolowski. So apologies to everybody. That was the best.
She's Julia Gulia, right?
Julia, yeah. Gulia Sokolowski. So I tried. I failed. Can't win them all. I was like going to have this elaborate story about like her prom or something, and I was going to play that, and the Rob was going to be Boston Rob, and he drank too much and got into a fight with Amber, and he won her back with some 311 saying, Amber is the color of your energy. But we never went there. It didn't happen. It didn't come together.
Didn't happen. All right. Well,
That's some process behind the scenes.
Well, we only have a couple of weeks left here.
I'll pull it together for the future. I'll get my game back.
It's all right. So just two wiggle rooms left before the finale. So really, we're getting down to it.
Oh, man. It's wrapping up, and so far it's all gone pretty right.
Yes. Yeah. It's been very, very fun all the way through. Of course, that Josh is going to be through this way for the finale, so yeah. We will have some sort of after the season is over, we'll try to get together, schedule permitting, if we could do some sort of we'll take voicemails, we'll do some sort of a season-long Wiggle Room wrap-up.
Guaranteed. We'll do something.
Okay, we'll do something together once the season is over as well. All right. So, Josh, what's the hashtag today?
Oh, man. Loosey Goosey was fun.
Smoky Burger. Lockpod.
Yeah. Lockpod. I like the smoking burger.
Smoke Monster Burger?
Smoke Monster Burger.
It was Smoky Burger or Smoking Burger?
I think it's like the smoking burger, like the smoking gun, you know?
Okay. There you go. All right, so
the smoking gun, an establishment many survivors are used to.
Is that still around?
I don't know.
All right, so that's what's going on with the hashtag. Of course, David Bloomberg is going to be here on the podcast tomorrow to talk about everything that's going on with why Julia lost. Josh is going to, not only will he have an expert exit interview with the next person kicked off of the show this Thursday, you could also get all of his Game of Thrones coverage for THR at Round Howard.
That's right.
And then Josh and I are continuing our coverage of Game of Thrones. We'll be live Sunday nights to talk about everything going on there. We also have our feedback show. Josh does his book club. Plus, we are covering Fear the Walking Dead on Post Show Recaps. And Josh,
don't forget Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh,
that
no,
exists.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. And then also, you just kicked off a new recap podcast of Mr. Robot.
Yeah, Mr. Robot. If you guys enjoyed the Mazzaro Zone a couple of weeks back when Antonio Mazzaro showed up here in the Wiggle Room, Antonio and I have just kicked off a Mr. Robot rewatch podcast that is going to be one episode recapped every single week leading up to the season 2 premiere of Mr. Robot on July 13. We're going to be doing those podcasts both as spoiler-free versions for the majority or the first half at least of the podcast, followed up by a spoiler-filled section. So if you've already seen Mr. Robot, I think it'll be fun podcasting. And if you haven't seen Mr. Robot before, it's going to be safe podcasting for at least the majority of the podcast. Really excited about that. Great, great show. Really regretting that we didn't recap it last summer, but now we're making up for it.
All right, good stuff. Looking forward to reading your comments on robhasawebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.
fortune's true. I know this much is true. Oh, yes, I do, Robbie and you.